Hello, welcome back to the Out of Spec podcast. I am Jordan. I have with me Kyle, and we have with us Dominic Yoni. He is a mellifluous musician, and you may find him in your local Florida open mic night, or by day you may know him as the editor and forum moderator for Inside EVs, as well as one of the pillar hosts who helps keep the show on track, or tries to, while the other gentlemen just blab on about. Anyways, Dom, welcome to the show. Welcome to our kind of guest series. Of course, we've done many podcasts with you over on Inside EVs, but it's fun to have you over here and kind of hear a bit more about what you do. A lot of people go to Inside EVs, and we cover news as well on our show, not EV centric necessarily, but not everyone knows where you come from. How'd you get there? So do you want to touch on that?
First of all, he's from the Canadian side of the border.
Oh, yes.
So that explains half of the intricacies of Dom right there.
Yeah. And where in Canada are you from?
So I was born in Toronto, but I grew up in on the East Coast in New Brunswick, rural New Brunswick. And then I moved to Montreal for like 11 years. And then I moved down here. And by the way, I'm just showing off.
Nice. Yeah. What cheers. Are you guys drinking, by the way?
This is a Pilsner Urquell. It's a Czech beer, the original Pilsner, I believe.
Nice.
It was a 2-for-1, so yeah.
Why not? Yep. I have a Managgia all'Alba Sangiovese, which is an old world style red wine from Italy.
That was amazing pronunciation. I'm drinking some good old Kentucky straight bourbon.
Which Kentucky straight bourbon?
Like it's not my favorite. It's a very basic Basil Hayden. Not what I would typically go for. Just had some in the house. Made a pretty good dent in the bottle, considering this isn't one of my favorite whiskeys.
Right. I need to try that. I mean, it's one of those ones I look at sometimes. I don't think I've actually bought that. I usually go for like Bullet or...
Angel's Envy is the jam.
That's Kyle's favorite.
Yep. How much is that? Is that like $50 bottle?
It's like this might be like $10 cheaper, $5 cheaper for the same amount, but it's got like a fancier bottle, which to me seems a little gaudy. I'm not into this metal strip.
Right.
I like a nice, honest bottle of whiskey. And to me, Angel's Envy is, it is commercial grade. It's not specialized. There's so many better, weird, I guess, I don't know the right word for it, but artisan whiskey.
Yeah, it's delicious without being intricate.
It's like Chili's. You just know it's going to be good every time you go.
I've never been to Chili's.
I went there for lunch today. I love Chili's.
Classic. So, right. Dom, I guess what brought you to the U.S. first of all? And where did you go first?
So I have dual citizenship because my father was American. So I always had the option of moving to the States. And I was just tired of, being unemployed in Montreal, and then my sister invited me down here to Florida to visit, and Florida turned out to be a lot nicer than I kind of expected it to be, and I ended up like just staying basically. And I just got a job driving a truck, delivering auto parts at night time, and listening to the radio and driving 400 miles a day, and I loved it. Actually, it was great.
So what part of Florida did you originally move to? Because I've been to your house in Tallahassee, and it's wonderful. Yes. The steepest driveway known to man. I mean, that driveway does not exist here in Colorado because it would be impassable in the wintertime.
Oh, yeah, I remember, no, you couldn't do this in the winter. No.
You got to go like extra handbrake. Like it must be a 100-degree slope. It's a 45-degree angle almost.
Yeah, I would say it's about 45, just about 45, maybe 40.
Yeah, I mean, when I say 100-degree slope, I meant to say 100% slope. It's really unbelievable. Like, when I say it's steep, I don't mean like, oh, you have a steep driveway. I mean, like, you look at the moon on this thing. Why did you buy a house with such a crazy driveway?
Well, it was cheap, and it was I did a lot of shopping for this house, and because we were living in, like, in a trailer before. And for, like, when I first moved here, I just lived in the trailer, and whatever, it was fine. But then I got married, so I needed a proper house, and so we did a lot of shopping around, and this was on the market, good price. And
it's a nice house. Like it was awesome. Right, yeah. It had a beautiful backyard, and the driveway is a non-issue in Florida. You really don't get snow more than, do you even get snow?
It doesn't stick on the ground. Every once in a while it'll fall, but it doesn't stick on the ground. Yeah,
I was gonna say, so you're not going flying down in your Spark EV. You don't have to worry about that.
Could the driveway play a part in determining what car you own? Like, is there a breakover angle you need to?
I mean, the breakover angle is something you need to consider. You know, really, if it was like a super low car with a super long wheelbase, it might not work. But so I drive a 2015 Spark EV, Chevy Spark EV, and it's got a short wheelbase and it breaks over real easy and it drives up in there. And my other vehicle is a 1988 Ford Ranger STX four-wheel drive. So it's got, I think it's something like around 2 inches of lift from the factory. So it's plenty high and it goes over there.
And it's a manual, right?
It is a manual. Oh, yeah.
That's excellent.
Truck.
It's like driving a tractor. It's been a while since I've driven. I need to replace the battery.
Well, you got to cycle it and let it move. You know, I actually haven't driven. I have one of these Sprinter camper vans and I hadn't driven it in since I think we took it to rescue the Model 3. So it's been almost a month and started it up and gave it, I don't know, 3 minutes just to warm up and think about life and backed it out of the garage and then stalled right in the middle of the road. And I was like, well, this is a brand new 2021 vehicle that just stalled. What kind of crap is this? And I was like, wow, you really got to drive these combustion vehicles. They just do not like to sit.
Yeah, mine's been sitting a bit longer than that. I went to take it out a while back to do some. I usually pull it out when my friend calls up and they need to move something. You know, it's like a truck. I'm the friend with a truck.
What do you think about the Ford Maverick Hybrid? Because that's a small truck, kind of like yours.
I think it's great. I mean, I really like it. It's affordable. I mean, that's really the great part. You know, the price is like a 20,000 neighborhood or close to it to start with. And, you know, it's small. It's unpretentious. It does work. It's got great gas mileage. You know, I'm an electric vehicle guy. It's not electric, but, you know, there's nothing comparable in the electric market and there won't be for a while. So I think it's a great vehicle.
And then when you look at those in sort of mass deployment, if people are switching from their, you know, regular F-150s or stuff and downsizing, I think from a CO2 standpoint, it's really doing a lot to reduce emissions. The reason I bring it up is we tested it last week and I think Jordan and I both fell in love with this truck. And I think the best way to describe it was how you did, which is it's an unpretentious vehicle that just goes about its business. It's no frills, but it's also not bad to be in like that. The best interior.
I saw it in person. It looks fine. Yeah.
I really like it, but I think that brings me on to why are EVs so expensive, and what do we do? You know, even the used market's gone crazy. Do you remember, Dominic? Because you've been covering EVs. I think maybe we should. I'm getting too excited talking about cars. But you originally, when you got into the automotive business, were, you know, you were driving your truck around delivering parts, but you got into Autoblog Green. Is that?
Yeah. So I started writing with Autoblog Green. I never really wrote before that. And just after Katrina, it was, so Katrina happened and, you know, it was really a weather event that was, you know, a lot of global warming issues sort of, you know, was placed on, put under that banner or whatever. Anyway, it got me thinking about, you know, how can we reduce our carbon in transportation? So I read as much as I could on the internet and looked at different alternatives like diesel and this and that, biodiesel, ethanol. And this electric seemed like the best thing. So, you know, I started reading Autoblog Green and they had a lot of electric vehicle news. There weren't a whole lot of electric vehicles at the time, but so I just read a lot and then eventually I would comment a lot and then eventually they asked for submissions for writers. And I said, well, why not? And so I sent them like a really terrible article. It was so bad. And they still hired me anyway. That's great.
So who was running Autoblog Green back then? Cause John Neff was doing the full Autoblog site, right?
Right.
We've had him on this program before.
Oh yeah. Yeah. John was running Autoblog, but then Sebastian Blanco ran Autoblog Green.
Okay. Is he still kicking around?
Oh yeah. He's and I think he's going to be doing some stuff for Inside EVs too. I think I'm not really sure exactly, but I've seen him just recently. He's been freelancing a lot and he does regular work for here and there. I forget Forbes maybe. I forget exactly, but yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah. So you submitted articles and then at what point did it turn from a hobby of writing about electric cars and sharing your passion of efficiency and reducing, you know, our load on climate to obviously, you, what's interesting about you is you're very much focused on our climate, but also performance.
I like performance.
So electric's really perfect because you get all the power and stuff. But at what point did you take this from, okay, I'm doing this for fun, to this is now my full-time job to be working in the auto industry?
Right. Well, it was a part-time job for me for years. I mean, I just, you know, I would just write, you know, 3-4 articles a day or whatever it was for Audubon Green. And then that kind of petered up over time. You know, the editors and chiefs changed. It changed from Audubon Green, went away, and it was just I was just working for Audubon, and it was just fine. But I don't know. I just wasn't quite as engaged. And eventually I quit. And because I got a job, regular job, that my driving job went away. My job, driving job changed a few times. You know, I was driving for an independent parts distributor, then a different one. And then I was driving for FedEx at night doing a shuttle run, and that didn't really pay well. And so then I got an office job doing like CAD CAM kind of stuff, which I, you know, they trained me for. I just learned how to do it in about 6 months of that. And John Neff called me up, who was the former editor-in-chief of Autoblog, and asked me if I wanted to help start a forum, an electric vehicle forum for inside EVs. And I said, okay, sure.
How long ago was that?
3 years, 4 years? I'm not really sure now. Maybe it's 4 years now.
I think it must be 4 years because I got involved 3 years ago and you were already involved by then.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and I didn't expect it to work, because you know, forums, internet forums, are really like, you know, 90s and early 2000s kind of deal. You know, everyone's on Facebook now, Facebook groups for this kind of information. But you know, I think the forums still have a good place and have a lot to offer, but you know, they're overshadowed, I think, by Facebook a lot now. But
yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of people, they are mutually exclusive in terms of how they can exist, because the amount of people I meet that just don't have Facebook or don't care, or Facebook to them is how to interact with friends and family. And then there's me, who, like you said, I use Facebook as my forum place. I am just right in 300 groups. I mean, OEM wheels on different makes and models, headlight spotting on RVs, like every group you can think of has been come up with, and so it's on Facebook.
Headlight spotting on RVs?
Yeah.
Really?
That's the best group on Facebook. Should we explain this?
Yeah, Kyle, explain it.
I mean, okay, so there's a group on Facebook, and there's a group for everything. A couple of my favorites, one I bring up a lot, is foreign market car sightings, which are cars in places of the world where they were never intended to be. So whether it's right-hand drive Japanese stuff or like a suburban in downtown Shanghai, really interesting things. But this one is great specifically because we have a lot of different RV makers here in the US, and a lot of them are hodgepodge together with whatever DOT approved parts you can get. So the idea of this group is to guess what headlights and taillights they used on the RVs going down the road, because a lot of these RV makers don't have enough volume to produce their own lighting designs.
Right. No. You just buy whatever you can get on the open market.
A lot of them use like Chevy Tahoe headlights.
Sure. That makes sense.
So you'll see like Chrysler 300 rear taillights on a RV.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. So are you good with checking? Are you good with that? Can you look at like an RV and figure out what kind of headlights they have, Jordan?
I'm pretty good, but there are some people are majorly better at it.
Yeah, I'm not great at it. I just get entertainment out of it. But like Kyle said, I love the foreign market car spotting one. I've even posted a few times because it was great, because I found it. Like the day after I saw Volkswagen Amarok in Boulder, Kyle told me about that group. And I was like, oh, finally a place I could post these photos in. Because I was like, what do I do with this picture? No one's going to care. Literally no one's going to. Everyone's going to be like, oh, you posted a picture of a pickup truck. But then there's these people who are like super nerds and want to see foreign cars and other markets. And so that's the place for it. But like I said, a lot of people, and you know, I'm really deep in the Miata communities. I run a few Miata groups and stuff on Facebook, and there's a huge percentage that are in the Venn diagram that don't overlap. People who are only on Facebook and in Miata groups, and then people who only go to the forums in the Miatas. And I think that's probably true for any vehicles. I mean, there's just people that don't care about Facebook, so it can't be the only platform. And I think forums can often be easier to search. If you're just going, because people are a lot of times going to Google and just saying such and such, and that's not usually going to parse through like a Facebook group, especially if it's private, right. And a lot of them are, versus forums. Like, I've found a lot of value in forums from the Miata stuff, because I'm looking for the wiring diagram for the head unit of a 2012 Miata. And that's, I don't know where I'd find that in Facebook unless I'm already in the group, versus someone right. who's a prospective buyer maybe would not necessarily go to Facebook first.
Yeah, I got in forums with my Ranger, basically because Rangers, you know, I wouldn't say high maintenance, but, you know, things go wrong. And I have an STX and it's very particular. It's got, you know, very particular suspension parts that the other Ford Rangers don't have. And so to get the information I needed to go, you know, search through forums to find out what I needed. So I got familiar with them there. And then yeah. I just explored more of those later on with like the Tesla Motors Club was a great forum, especially at the beginning. Aptera had there was an Aptera forum that was pretty colorful, pretty interesting, yeah. pretty busy. Yeah. I like that. Nice. That was good.
Why do you think the Aptera forum, they're not publicly traded, right?
I mean, it went away a long time ago, that forum. Oh, it died.
Okay.
The first run, yeah. Yeah. In 2010 ish, 12 ish.
They're letting people drive them now. I think next time we go to Cali, we'll be able to set up a drive, right, Jordan?
Yeah, you might get into like a beta vehicle. I think that's what they have going now, right?
Yeah, Forrest drove it, and he was pretty disappointed with the quality, but it was, you know, pre production. And there's yes. pre production can mean barely running or basically production. And we've seen every part of that spectrum. So I think that would be fun to drive, because I think they're in what, San Diego, something like that.
Yeah. So I think they're pretty rough as far as, you know, there's not really finished in the software is not, you know, it's just kind of cool put design, together. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I love the design.
Yeah. They released some new sketches, I think earlier this week, on Sunday, actually. And I just found about them actually on a forum. There's a one Aptera guy member who's, you know, he's the only person I think we have really in our Aptera. So our Inside EVs forum has like a sub forum for most of the major makes and models of cars, of electric cars. And mm-hmm. Aptera has its own sub forum now. And so, but he's basically the only guy in there for the most part. You know, he does like the major merge. He kind of keeps things going. So if you're interested in Aptera, you can probably find the latest little bit of news. You know, he's got posted up in there, but that's just cool. So anyway, he had this post with all these different photos that they had released of the new design. And it looks good. I think Jason Hill is their designer. He was with them originally and he's back with them again.
Nice. Yeah. So from the forum perspective, I mean, do you have analytics as far as how many people are using these forums on a daily basis? Like, do you know how popular they kind of are, or is it just like each subset has its little niche?
Yeah. I mean, I can see. So I look at Analytics 360 through Google, and that kind of tells me my overall traffic. I could dig into that deeper if I want. But, you know, I'm pretty busy with everything I do.
Yeah, because you're not just running the forum. You're also a community moderator. So you do a lot of comments throughout the site. Like I think what's really unique about Inside EVs and Motor One, but I would say even more Inside EVs, is we can write about a very controversial topic. You guys can cover a really, you know, important piece that might have split view, whether it's Tesla or a Tesla competitor. And I think like the users of the site generally are very, you know, sort of calm, and they share their thoughts, but that takes a lot of work from your side to keep the, you know, that viewpoint looking that way.
Because right. Well, we moderate it pretty, sorry.
Go ahead. That's fine.
I was just going to say, we moderate it Inside EVs pretty heavily as far as the comments go. Traditionally that's the way it's been done there. So, you know, as I think it says at the beginning, you know, no insults, no swearing. So, if you do too much of that, you'll get banned. And I'm sorry.
I mean, from a daily perspective, you're really an integral part of that. We also do the weekly podcast for Inside EV, which is now having bonus shows, which is really exciting, going into an infrastructure series. If you're into electric cars and you don't already, make sure you check out the Inside EVs podcast. But I'm pretty sure everyone who listens to this already knows about it. I guess, Dominic, can we talk more about your personal interest? Because on the show, on Inside EVs, people have gotten to know you and me and Tom, but only a very small portion of us, and not really where our genuine interests lie, car related or not car related. So I guess You know, what I'm really curious, and I've never asked you this, if you had to buy an electric car today, you know, money, no object, other than Rimac Nevera, which I know would be number one. You know, if we're talking, you know, reasonably expensive.
Mass consumer car, maybe.
And not hypercar level. We're you know, you go up to 150 grand. What would you be bringing home?
Man, that's hard. That is a very difficult question. Man, there's so many great cars right now that I like. I like Porsche Taycan. I like even Tesla Model S was kind of nice that I got to drive in.
We drove in the Taycan 4S. You were in the Cannonball car. We took it out to Key West together. Remember that?
Yes. I got to drive that one.
Yep.
And I drove the Audi GT. That was what I drove in California with y'all.
Right.
Yeah, you drove the RC Tron.
Yeah, that's all right. I prefer the Taycan more than that. Then, you know, the Rivian R1T or the R1S possibly, but I like a pickup truck. So I have a two-car garage, but, you know, if I could narrow it down to just like the one vehicle, it kind of be a truck, and then I could, you know, load whatever up, kayaks and camping and whatever. It'd be great.
I mean, Kyle knows I'm obsessed with two-car solutions. So if you filled your garage, what would that look like? I mean, a Rivian, and then what would be your almost sporty counterpart if you care about the sporty driving?
I think the Rivian, well, I mean, the Rivian's already pretty sporty driving. Yeah, I'm very curious what the GMC Sierra EV is going to be like. I have a feeling that's going to be pretty nice. And yeah, but I mean, I kind of like the Rivian because it's a little bit smaller. I've always liked the smaller pickup trucks more than the big pickup trucks. So I drive a Ranger.
Yeah.
I don't know. So small, sporty, man. I don't really make what I want yet, I don't think.
I'm in the same boat.
I'm on a convertible. I'm on a two-door convertible.
I really want a Tesla Roadster, the old one even, except maintaining that would be a nightmare.
Yeah. But even that's like a targa top. It's not.
Yeah, it's not a full
convertible. I want full open.
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe I would hate it. I've never owned a convertible, but I've rented them a few times.
Oh, and I will always own a full convertible. And yeah, they haven't made my car yet. But I don't know. I mean, even the other day, me and Kyle saw a Beetle, and I was like, an MEB based Beetle full convertible electric car. That would actually intrigue me a bit. It'd be weird and quirky.
It's right there for Volkswagen. They can
two doors, right?
They're making the bus on the MEB chassis. They have the ID3 adapted on MEB. Just take the rear doors out, give it a drop top, and we have the new MEB Beetle. Why not?
Yep.
Yeah, I think so. You should work for Volkswagen.
That would be my license plate. It would be MEB Beetle. And the super nerds would get it.
All right, let's call Herbert himself. I'll give him a ring right now. Say, hey, dude, make the Beetle.
Yeah, nice.
So I guess when you owned your Spark, did you buy it new? Like, how long have you had
it? No, I bought it secondhand. It had like 9,000. I did a lot of shopping around. I think it took me like 3 months to find the deal. I was like torn between the Spark EV and the Fiat 500e. It took me a while.
Because the 500e, you made the right choice. The 500e is interesting, but the Spark is a much more serious package.
I think it's Fiat. I mean, it's the Fiat 500D is a little less robust, say.
Well, it's funny. I had a Fiat 500. Not the E, just a 500, and it was a very robust car, except for the electronics. So why would I want a 500 that is all electronics?
Right. Yeah, I mean, so far I've been pretty happy with, you know, knock on wood, with this car. I mean, I really like it. It's fun to drive. You know, steering feel feels great. It's got a lot of zip for in town. Small and compact. You can whip it around anywhere. And nothing's broken on it yet, really. I mean, nothing. I mean, it's got the battery. It's 2015. It's got the original battery in it. There's like this original 12 volts, which is bizarre. I'm waiting for it to strand me. Like, I almost replaced that. So I had a little diagnostic light come on like last summer sometime. It's like, oh, I wonder if that means my battery's about to go. But then it didn't. And then it went away. I was like, okay, well, I'll just keep on driving.
That's perfect. So, that's the best part of these cars, is you just keep going. And then when they do break, it's really generally pretty simple.
Yep.
Hopefully.
I mean, that would suck if it wasn't. I think we'll be sending you the smart car if it does break. We'll get you down that thing.
Yeah, so I got really lucky on this one. So it was like a $9,000, and it had like 9,000 miles on it.
Wow.
So it was, which, and it was in a couple of years ago, so it was like a little bit newer.
Yep.
And
today you could probably sell it for more than that.
I could probably sell it for at least that. Well, put even new tires on it, and then I could sell it for,
give it a full charge, add another couple bucks on top.
So yeah, I charged it the other day, and it's starting to warm up in Tallahassee, and so
did it ever get cold?
Yeah, it gets cold here. It's chilly here in the wintertime, I learned when I first moved here. I was really surprised. It gets below freezing at nighttime sometimes.
Wow.
What's the range in the cold?
My range will drop to like 66 miles, basically. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I'm just looking for pictures.
Are you ever going 66 miles anywhere? Airport is probably the farthest place, right?
Yeah, if I forget to charge, do fair. A couple of things.
But have you put in a level 2 at your house yet?
I have. I finally plugged it in. I had the plugs. I just charged this thing off of 110 for like the first 2 years. And then last fall, I had a 240 outlet put in that I could plug in this EVSE, this electric, what is it called?
Electric vehicle supply equipment.
Right. Stupidest acronym ever.
Charger. Even though it's not
a home charging unit, basically. Yeah. So anyway, I plugged it in. It got warmer the other day.
Oh.
81 miles of predicted range.
Whoa, you can go across the country. And it has
brand new, it was like, well, brand new, 7 years, 6 or 7 years ago, it was 83 miles. So that's not a whole lot of degradation. Right. It's not super accurate now. No.
Yeah.
I need to measure it properly with put something in the OBD2 port, and then there's some software readings. You can see what the cells are actually doing.
Right. And then you got to drive it from full charge to where it doesn't move anymore and log how many kilowatt hours you can pull out of it at low speed with low acceleration. I guess, back when I was at your house, it was a few years ago now, I saw the Spark EV, but it was having issues with Electrify America back then. Remember, Sparks like didn't communicate for some reason, but I think that's fixed now.
I mean, so John Neff, who we talked about before, he had a Spark EV. I think he's got rid of it now, but he successfully DC fast charged Electrify America up in Ohio. And I did try it here a couple times with no luck, but then he did his like successful charging episode. But I haven't tried it since because, it's across town, like the Electrify America fast chargers. I don't go over there too often. When I do, I don't need to charge because it's not that far away,
I'd be curious though. You should swing in and just see if you can get it to activate and charge on some of the newer software. That would be an interesting story, I think, is, we've gone from zero successful sessions to two. I think that'd be a great thing to talk about on the podcast.
That's true. And I believe I do have some video footage, poor video footage for my first like ill-fated attempts still on my phone. Yeah.
Yeah, let's put together a little podcast segment on that. I would say just run over next time you're there. Just, obviously if you don't need to charge, that's what you want, because it may not. And it also could be dependent on the Electrify America hardware. Certain hardware, in Ohio could be different spec than what you have, because they have two or three different manufacturers of chargers that they use. But I'd be really curious about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're a living, breathing example of why not everyone needs 200 plus miles of range. Because that's an interesting thing that's been very present lately amongst all the, especially the non-EV focused car groups that I'm in. Someone will post something about an EV and they'll say, hey, what are y'all's impressions? And it's usually a combustion car owner commenting saying, oh, that thing only has 210 miles of EPA range. It's trash.
Right.
And it's like, I don't know. It's interesting to hear people's arguments back and forth over and over of how much range do you actually need?
Right. I mean, it all depends, how much range and where are the fast charging, facilities, and where do you drive a lot? So maybe for some people it still won't work. Maybe there's not, fast charging where they need it to be yet. I mean, it's coming, but, we're not quite there yet. I don't think there's still big stretches out by you, north of you in Colorado and in Wyoming. There's,
it's impossible to get Lake even today, even though they're building in the network needed, but this will get completed soon. But I think there's another big glaring issue that's becoming increasingly more apparent to me, especially as we're starting to see this wave of new vehicle launches. They're all crazy expensive. Rivians are now 100 grand maxed out. Taycans are 100 grand maxed out. You know, the cheapest new electric car in the U.S., I think $30,000.
Nissan Leaf? Nissan Leaf? I think it's below that.
Yeah, 27, yeah. Something like that. 20 grand.
27, like, yeah. And you can probably get, you can probably find a Chevy Bolt EV for that as well, if once they sell them again.
Yeah, so but the problem then is like, that's still 30 grand for a new car. It would be great to, like, I think we need a really freaking cheap city electric car for people that just has 110 charging, that's totally decontented. We need like the Ford Maverick approach to EVs, because the thing that really sucks about electric cars in America for people is, and I don't want to go on and on about this, but
it's okay.
We have massive subsidies for electric cars, $7,500 for each electric car. But like, it's
tax,
not
that's a tax credit though, and people who buy cheap cars can't take advantage of it.
Thank you. That's my point. It's like, we're only helping rich people drive nice cars.
Right.
Where's the benefit to anyone in that? What it should be is either cash on the hood so everyone can take advantage of it, or we really need to put some effort into making, I think, a very affordable, short-ish range electric car. And Blue's going crazy over here.
So Volkswagen just brought back the E-Up in Europe. That's the kind of car you're talking about. It's kind of like the like my Spark. And actually, the Spark would be a great car to bring back too in electric form. I'm not sure why GM did away with that so much, but I think, you know, if they could sell it cheap, you know, why not?
What about this Wuling Hong Ching something?
No, that's too
out there.
Wouldn't pass crash testing here, I don't think.
Okay, so that's the thing, because there was this wave of candy EV excitement. You remember this? And I am still the only independent journalist to ever drive a Candy EV for review.
Yeah, I don't know how they thought they could do that. Yeah.
Well, they were so convinced. And, you know, I was still pretty early on in reviewing cars. And I'm like, oh, you'll pass crash? You're convinced? Great. We'll put that in the video. Now I would never do that. I'd be like, call me when you can sell this thing. And, you know, you live and learn, of course. That was an interesting proposition, because it was going to be like $10,000 or $6,000 in Colorado, $10,000 in other states that didn't have a state credit. Of course, you'd have to make the money to qualify for the federal, but at least the state is cash on the hood.
Right.
And I thought that was going to be transformative. Level one charging, had pretty good range, drove decently for the price. And like, that really was exciting to me, because then it's like, It accomplishes really three main topics that I think are really underserved. First is, from an emissions standpoint, I think a lot of wealthy people don't mind spending a couple extra $1,000 to have a fun toy to commute around in and do their errands, whatever. So that's reducing their emissions. But I think that's the least important part of what that car can do. The second is it really can be a great financial tool for someone who owns a combustion car to purchase this as their everyday inner city commute to work. And then they have their combustion car for long trips, because you couldn't just own one as your only car if you do business outside of town or go see family. But then there's a whole nother category of people that literally cannot afford to own and operate a vehicle, whether it's a used vehicle that requires maintenance, or a new vehicle
insurance,
that requires financing, insurance, all of these things.
All that stuff. Cars are expensive, man. Holy cow.
And insanely expensive. And so I thought, like, okay, for 10 grand or something like this, you could finance it for, I don't know, $70 a month with insurance. You're into this thing for, you know, 150, maybe, depending, you know, driving records. But I'm like, that's a pretty manageable thing for someone making, you know, sort of minimum wage, who just needs to get to and from work. And I think in Europe, they're way ahead of this. They have the Citroën Ami, which I love because it's so quirky and interesting and whatever, right? But it really does serve a purpose of being cheap transportation for people who otherwise may not have been able to drive it. And I think we have no solution to this right now in the U.S., and it's a big gaping hole in the car market. But not to go on a ramp. I don't need to go on.
No, that's fine. I mean, it's a good point. Yeah, there is like the equivalent of like a Nissan Sentra or a Chevy Spark, non-EV, which they still make the Chevy Sparks. But, you know, I'm not sure how much they cost. But, you know, $12,000, $13,000, like basic transportation, like nothing fancy.
I think we really need something under 10, and I think it's doable.
Man, I don't think, but we don't have any gas cars under 10 though.
Yeah, I think it's doable. Golf carts are under 10.
And sometimes you can use golf carts.
Yeah, so anyway,
Street, Georgia, I think.
Yeah, let's go make a cheap car. Should be easy, right? It'll end up being 200 grand.
Yeah, exactly. We'll raise our prices 17% just before.
Anyway, it's a shame. And then, you know, we get into charging these cars, and that's, you know, a topic we've been covering a lot on Inside EVs, which is how do you make charging better than gas from an experience side, from a cost side, but then also, you know, that just works and that is ubiquitous. And that is a topic that no one's cracked the code yet.
Right. Well, I mean, just starting with the plug and charge thing, right?
Yeah, plug-in charge. We have the EQS that just got dropped off. Speaking of cheap and inexpensive cars, the new luxury Mercedes. But this just got dropped off. It has plug-in charge. We'll be doing some charging tests with it.
Which EQS?
It's a 450 plus, which is the rear-wheel drive, big battery, but it has snow tires. So they didn't send an all-wheel drive to Colorado.
Right. Of course. Strange. Because why would you do that?
Yeah, because
it's not like it snows in Colorado.
And this is right after we had the hot weather Land Rover Defender.
Right.
With no off-road capability.
And Land Rover sent the least off-roady version of their vehicle to the place with the most off-road trails.
Oh man. Did you take it off-road?
No, because it didn't have anything.
We drove around to the mall. That's what people are going to do with
it. Off-roaded. Okay.
But we actually had another one that had all the off-roady stuff. So we can't complain too much. But it was just such a weird spec to arrive.
Do you have snow there now to take the EQS out in?
No, it was 70 degrees and sunny today. There's snow on the ground, but not on the pavement.
Right. Right. I guess you'd have to go off-road, but then you don't really want to take the EQS off-road.
No. I do not want to put a scratch in that car. Mercedes wouldn't be so happy about that, I don't think. Oh, so nice. What with the EQS?
Are you enjoying it now? I mean, you've been in the EQS a few times before, but...
Yeah, I've spent, you know, a couple hundred, maybe even close to 1,000 miles in EQS at this point. Okay. I drove this one 2 miles today, and then when I got home, Blue had a medical emergency. We had to rush him to the vet. So it's just sat in the driveway all day. And, but yeah, he's fine, which is good.
That's good.
Accidentally got into too much medicine and we were worried he overdosed, and he did. And we got him there in time. So a crisis averted. But
Blue,
what I thought may have been a $5,000 or $6,000 visit was only $300. So we're good.
That's nice.
I was like, here we go.
I know that feeling.
Real life work. I'm joking. We would pay anything for him. Blue, come here.
That's the thing. Yeah, you would pay anything. It's just like, it just hurts afterwards.
Yeah.
Here he is, nice and healthy. Puppies. After his big scare today.
So does this EQS have the big hyper screen across the front of it?
Yes, it does. I believe they only have one media car in the US without it. And I don't like it.
I'm actually in the same boat. It can be fun and gimmicky. Like when we were out at the Out of Spec Summit thing we did in California,
right?
I had Drew in the passenger seat and I was like, Drew, would you please enable my massaging seat? And he was like, yes, sir, right away. And he got on his screen and turned on my massaging seat. And, you know, it was like, you know, a fun passenger seat butler situation, but like he could have done everything on the center screen.
Right. It's got a center screen on the by your arm in there anyway, right? You could do all that there. You don't really need one in front of you. But even like a Cadillac, and that's one of the hallmarks of the new Cadillacs now. They're going to have screens from pillar to A-pillar to A-pillar. It's going to be all screen.
So can you tell us about this Cadillac thing you went to in
Warren, Michigan at the Tech Center in the Design Dome, GM Design Dome.
Wow. If they just spent that much time coming up with these names, they could build a pretty good car one of these days.
It was pretty nice. It's like a big round kind of room with a dome ceiling. And, you know, you walk in, it's kind of like almost like a church. It was very quiet. There's only a few of us there. And they had they have a portfolio of concepts called the Halo concepts. And there's three of them. There's a inner space, social space, and personal space.
And Blue fell off the couch. Look, he's trying to get back up now.
Blue, what's going on, Blue?
He's drugged up a little bit. He's going crazy. Blue, come on, get up.
Our audio listeners are missing out. Yeah, anyways,
come on, buddy.
So the personal space is like a hovercraft kind of situation, one person thing, and it's all autonomous. There's no steering wheel or controls. It's all voice operated, or maybe gestures. You know,
can you think of a scarier thing of being airborne in a vehicle with no controls?
That's very true. It's like being at an amusement park because you have no control. But then it's like in 3D world where anything could go wrong. Yeah, it's kind of, you put it that way. It's a little bit concerning. I don't know. It would take a while to build up my trust level and I guess the public's trust level as well.
Well, they have to make it first. Was there anything like material that was there that's going to come soon?
Well, the most material. So they had the inner space, which was a huge, you know, big coupe. And it also had no controls, and it was pretty cool. And it, you know, fancy doors and ever opening roof. But the closest thing to that coming is a Celestique, which is a four door, but it's also big and long and, you know, luxury, awesome. It's going to be, and it has its steering wheel, at least. So, you know, all the stuff that you're used to. But it, to me, I really like the Celestique. It really harkens back to older Cadillacs from like the 70s and 60s, you know, big and long, fancy taillights.
Yeah, we need more pizzazz in the world. I think, you know, you and I have spoken about this where, you know, I'm not so much into concepts, but what I do appreciate is that an electric vehicle architecture from a design perspective allows for crazy new unimagined designs. And shapes. And I think, you know, everything from bringing back the American land yacht from the 70s in today's interpretations. I think the EQS, by the way, is the most full embodiment of the American land yacht to happen because it's so squishy. It's so comfortable. There's not much sporting cred there. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. But I guess just because we're sort of getting near the end of our show, can we talk a little bit about your... I guess, interests, your predictions, where is this all going to go? Where are the areas that electrification needs big focus in? Because I know we talk about it every week on a very micro level, but what's your macro, pull back a little bit, full scale thought?
Where it needs to go? Well, we really need this whole supply chain issues to go away and get back on track with lowering prices because battery technology is advancing and prices have been coming down over, you know, batteries were like $1,000 a kilowatt hour, you know, 10 years ago. And now it's like around $100. So that's like a tenfold improvement, right? So that's going to continue. I think it will have again. I think we should be able to see $50 a kilowatt hour in within the next, you know, I don't know, 5 years. I would hope.
You think that's with current battery technology, or is this with some?
No, as it improves, because the more batteries improve, the less raw materials you need to hold a kilowatt hour of energy. And then hopefully we'll see other improvements like cold weather improvements and better performance and faster, the ability to take, you know, charges faster, better cycle life. You know, degradation is not too bad now.
But, no, it's really not.
Yeah, it's not really that big an issue. It's more energy storage and speed of charge, you know, because I'd love to see like 5 minute charging, you know, megawatt.
You see this new phone that came out today with this 5 minute charge, apparently.
Oh, really?
240 watts into a little phone. It rips.
What phone do you know offhand?
No, but Marquez was tweeting about it. It's pretty impressive.
Okay.
Yeah, for context, the iPhone charges at like 27 watts max.
Oh, really?
Like you can watch this thing in real time go 54, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9%. It's just
rips. Mine's not like that fast. I just got this phone and it's
the S22.
The Ultra.
Is there a big Ultra guy?
The Ultra is like bigger and it has four cameras instead of three. So it's just in higher and res on the other cameras. I got it because it's got great cameras. I think a big
Apple.
Yeah, I don't know from Apple.
Yeah, but Dom can do a 30x zoom. Well, 100x zoom, but it's terrible. But the 30x zoom is impressive. Me and Kai went to Best Buy the other day and I was playing with the S22 Ultra and I looked up, pointed at Kyle's face. I should have sent the photo to myself. And I used the 30x zoom, and it was amazing at how clear his face was from like 100 feet away.
That's a sight no one wants to see.
I saw some really nice pictures of the moon shot with it. And I was like, so they did that last year with the S21, whatever, and they look pretty good, but this one is even whatever. Anyway, it's a phone. I'm very happy I got it. Got it.
Nice.
But batteries and charge in cars. So yeah, cars, we need to get over this supply chain crunch, which it looks like with the conflict in the Ukraine and all that kind of stuff going on, it's going to make it exasperate the whole situation. It's like we're in like hell. But
it's only going to get worse, to be honest, I think, going forwards. BMW just shut down their production line in Dinglefing because they couldn't get wiring harnesses from Ukraine.
Right. Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll at some point get better. You know, it can't always be getting worse. I mean, I like to be a little optimistic.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. It will get better. I hope we will return with some sort of normalcy. Although even today, Rivian made their announcement where if you want your quad motor, you know, battery pack, the one that you put a reservation for, sorry, you're out of luck. It's what, $15,000 more expensive?
It's a bit more for sure. They didn't really message this that well, but I believe there's also the first edition buyers are still saving some money. It's still like $5,000 cheaper, I think, for first edition buyers. But they're still paying more, even those guys. But
girls,
whatever.
Look, you got to do what you got to do, but that's going to be a huge loss and a huge PR nightmare for them.
Yeah, but we do need cheaper batteries, and I think Tesla might be onto something with the LFP batteries, iron phosphate batteries, which are a lot cheaper to buy. They don't have quite the performance of regular batteries, but they're a lot cheaper. So the places that really need the reductions, I think, is like India is like one country that's, you know, huge, and it's got terrible, besides the whole carbon thing, they have terrible pollution in the cities. It kills a lot of people every year. And to have like small, cheap 100-mile LFP battery runabouts.
You may not even need that much. If they just put little plugs everywhere, 110 outlet, they probably have 230 volts. So you put little Schuko plugs everywhere, whatever, they'll get 3 kilowatts, which is probably fine for like an electric tuk-tuk. And actually, we should have a conversation about that, because Jordan, you and I know someone who runs the building where our office is in, who was heavily involved in working on reducing inner city pollution and direct emissions from these types of small transportation two-stroke devices.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Philippines has had a lot of those tuk-tuks as well, and there is an active sort of electric vehicle kind of scene in the Philippines, you know. But we're
seeing innovative things come out of it. We're seeing these new scooter companies come with sort of a rental or a subscription model where you can pull the batteries down and pop a different one in with battery changing stations. And
right,
a
lot of Gogoro,
there's a lot of advancement. And just a lot of like throwing ideas at the wall. I really don't know what's going to stick and what's not. But by far, I hope you would agree, Dominic, this is the time to cover this world.
Yeah, it's a really good time. Yeah, we were a little back in 2008 was a little bit early. And we were like scrounging for news. Any little, you know, Nissan Leaf had an accident somewhere. We're writing that up.
That was newsworthy.
It banged into a parking structure or something. I don't know. Anything. There was like no news. So everything got published. Now there's like a lot. There's a lot happening that, you know, you just can't cover it all. I got stuff coming in my email inbox all day long. I was like, I can't really do anything for you.
Yeah.
You know,
yep. Hell yeah. It's a great time to be alive. Great. It's exciting and scary. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff's happening, but you know, we're happy to see what you're doing in the industry, and we've enjoyed partnering alongside you, especially Kyle and Dom on the Inside EVs podcast. And
well, maybe we should talk about that really quick. Dom, do you remember, because we had Martin on this show a few weeks ago and we talked about the early days. We've had the whole crew. We've had John, Martin, Tom. And so I guess, you know, do you remember, because the Inside EVs podcast, I think, really is something special, where we have developed this incredibly engaged audience that
a good audience. Yeah.
Yeah. Each one of us brings a different angle or viewpoint in. And sometimes we make arguments just to make arguments. But what is your impression of the podcast and how it started and all of that? What I mean, did you expect it to be that good of a show?
Well, no, because as you can tell, like watching this podcast, I'm like, I'm not a really great public speaker. Like I get tongue tied, I twisted, and you know, I forget. I can't come up with the words I want to say, you know. Whereas Martin is like a professional BBC, you know, DJ broadcaster at one point. But yeah, so I guess we got a sponsorship or something, but for a podcast, but we didn't have a podcast, and so they asked for volunteers, and I'm like, no one was raising their hand or anything in the chat. And it's like, well, okay, I'll give it a shot. Yeah, we'll try it. And yeah.
And then it was we're still with the original starting crew of that show, aren't we? 100 episodes, which this will go up after it. But this week is 100 episodes of that show. I've had to look at your face for almost 2 years.
I'm sorry.
No, yeah. I'm just kidding. It's been great.
My face looked a lot different like 2 years ago, too, because before the pandemic, I was like short hair and no beard.
Right.
I think it was just started because the show just started. Like, yeah, just at the start of the pandemic. And
now you've gone full rock star mode. And I'm getting videos of you performing. And that's one thing. Maybe we should have you back on to talk a little bit more about music, because our show isn't about cars specifically. It's about anything. But I think it'd be really great to talk about some of the songs you've written, because I listen. I'm a fan. I listen to the music often. Not just on occasion. And so it's in the car when I drive around. I really enjoy it. And you make some wonderful music.
I need to do some proper recordings.
Yes, let's do that. I got an idea for an EV road trip, Dominic. You and I, we need to jump in a Cadillac Lyric, because it's named the Lyric because there's most amount of songs named after Cadillac.
That's right.
So musical themed road trip in the Lyric, where we go around to different recording studios, underground recording studios, not famous ones, people that have, you know, in the community developed their little things, and you record a different album or different song on your album across the country, and we road trip in the Lyric.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
What don't you like about it? I think that's a great
idea. Well, just recording is like a bit of a process, so that would just be me and my guitar. So to record something properly, you know, we have to bring like a bass player, and I have a bass player I've been working with.
How many seats bass. Does the guitar hold?
So, pardon?
How many is it? A 7-seater? It's 5-seater, right?
Well, it's only going to be a 3-seater with an electric with an upright bass in the back.
You put it on the roof.
There you go. Another idea I want to pursue is like maybe we find the quietest electric car and then put a couple microphones in it. And then I think it'd be fun if Dom and I did like a recording on the spot without planning it and just being like, this is recorded within X&X car.
Well, we got the car. It's the EQS. It's
BMW iX. I heard that was very quiet.
iX.
It is.
Very quiet. So e-tron, EQS, iX, and surprisingly, Mustang Mach-E and Ioniq 5, all very quiet, but like EQS is a whole nother level, I think.
Yeah.
But what's a little bit awkward for recording might be is that car is active noise cancellation. So I'm not sure of the actual noise levels. It's canceling a lot of the outside noise.
Which should be all that matters. But yeah. Well, we've about reached the end of our show. Okay. But Dom, we really appreciate you coming on, and we'll have to have you back, like Kyle said. Yeah. We enjoy having our friends on to hear what you do and what you'll do in the future. So, for those who want to find Dom, other than the open mic nights wherever you might be playing, Dominic_Y on Twitter. Of course, I'm Jordan_Schieffer, Kyle at It's Kyle Connor, and Out of Spec on Twitter. And we'll see you guys in the next one. Take care.